dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. A man who is in very much the front lines of that war in the United States Senate is our first guest, Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas. He's been a senator since 2011 after five terms in the U.S. House of Representatives. He serves on a number of committees of interest to us, but we're very keen, particularly on some work that he's doing at the moment in the Veterans Affairs area. And maybe we'll start with that. Senator, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about something that you have taken point on. It's a bipartisan initiative, I know, describing, I guess, itself as the Transition Assistance Program for our veterans coming out of the service. Why is this needed, and what's the point?
Well, we currently have a Transition Assistance Program, and the idea is that as you separate from the military, to help you understand what goes on in civilian life. That sounds kind of strange, but you know, after you've been in the service maybe for 20 years or even for 4 years, things change a little bit. So it talks about skills that you have in regard to interview skills, things like that. What we've tried to do, though, with our bill is modify it so that if you have a particular area that you'd like to go down, you get the general skills that are talked about, but also you have the opportunity to perhaps get more information on a specific area. For instance, if you were in the military and wanted to be a truck driver or a medic, something along those lines, then you'd have a pathway to follow and get additional information. This is so important in the sense, you know, if we can get our veterans successfully transition to civilian life, then, you know, we'll prevent problems. If you can support your family and, do the things that we want to do, then, again, that eliminates a lot of behavior that sometimes comes up that is, destructive behavior.
Right.
The name of the game is, economic opportunity.
Right. And these are remarkably skilled people, by and large. How does this fit with
They are so skilled. And the key is, is, again, getting them before the right audience and this and that. And the feedback that we're getting from our veterans, going to work, from the employers has just been tremendous.
Yeah. Senator, one of the other things that we've been doing for particularly the current generation of returning warriors is of course, the GI Bill. How does this transition project work with, complement, or in cases perhaps supplant that?
Well, it complements it. And, there's so many things. Right now, when you're in the military, you're able to get housing. You're able to get things like your health insurance and this and that. You get out, all of a sudden, you're
on your own
in a different world.
Yeah.
You are on your own, and so this really just tells individuals, about that, what to expect. The other thing that we've tried to do is we have another bill regarding this that would allow people that have transitioned out and then would like to go back and retake the TAP program to understand better, some of the other thing that they're not aware of many times is the benefits that they have in separating it through VA and things. So again, to retake the TAP program, and then also to make it such that when they're taking these programs, they allow for families, allow for wives, do it at times of the day when it's convenient, that a wife who's working, gets to come, so often in the military because they're deployed a lot, the spouse will be the one that's the bookkeeper and does a lot of these things.
Yeah, these sound like such practical and relatively
yes,
trivially costly exercises and actions, and yet obviously they can make such a difference. And we salute you, Senator John Bozeman, for your leadership. What are the prospects of enactment of this legislation?
I think they're very, very good, and they can. And the reason that it's important, you know, they don't cost a lot of money, but they save a lot of money. Again, if we can get our veterans, you know, employed, gainfully employed, where they can take care of themselves and their family, then you save a tremendous amount of money in the long run.
Unquestionably. Senator, let me switch gears. Something that I know you've taken a keen interest in over a long period of time is Africa.
Yes.
A couple of things that are very much on our minds, and I think on yours as well, I'd like to visit with you about. One is the sort of rising tide of jihadism in large parts of that continent. Also, the increasing presence and exploitation of the continent, by the Chinese, a real strategic play by them. You have been working on trade policy, but maybe you could broaden the lens more generally and talk about what kind of relationship the United States ought to be pursuing, both in the trade area and otherwise, with that continent.
Well, we're working really hard making it such that it's easier for America and Africa to trade with each other. And it really is important when you look at the developing nations in growth of GDP and things like that. Several of the African nations are in the top 10 list. So they've got tremendous resources. They've got tremendous potential. You're right. The Chinese are there and they're gobbling up everything they can. You know, instead of their takers, you know, rather than contributing back. So at some point, that's going to create even more problems for the Africans. So what we're trying to do is make it such that American companies, can be in their trading and again, do that in a responsible manner that will ultimately help the Africans as their economy develops and it creates new markets for us, which is so very, very important.
Well, I appreciate, again, you're paying attention to a part of the world that most of us neglect and that has enormous implications, as you say, on all of these scores and more for our security as well as our economic interests. And we thank you for your leadership on it. Senator Mann.
Well, the other part of that you mentioned that's so important is that there's an effort by, the Arabs, the radical Arabs, preying on the Africans, and they're trying to expand their territory, and that's really what it's all about. And so that's something that we need to help the Africans be able to push back. We can do that not by direct military intervention, but we can do that by again helping strengthen their economies, and then also we have a great program where we take individuals that are in the ranks of the military in these kind of countries, have them come over and train with our guys here in the United States, mm-hmm. and then send them back with best management practices
right.
and how a professional military functions.
Yeah, well, it is probably going to be increasingly required because, as you say, the jihadists are on the march in that part of the world and
very much so.
Emboldened by our absence, I think. Senator, you serve on the Labor, Health, Human Services, and Education Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee. You will be dealing with very shortly, not in that subcommittee, but on the floor of the Senate, the nomination by President Obama of the next Secretary of Labor, Thomas Perez. What do you make of this nomination? Are you inclined to oppose it, support it? How do you feel?
Well, I'm inclined to oppose it and really have real concerns. We've seen the ideological nature that is in the IRS and some of these other
yes.
situations. It seems like we're discovering a new one daily. But I'm very concerned about the Department of Labor. They have an ability to really, like the IRS, make it such that it can be very difficult for companies that aren't of their particular political ilk or whatever. And I think we really need to look into that, you know, with past performance. But I worry about somebody like this being at the helm of that and right now, you know, are very much inclined not to support.
Well, I commend you for that. I personally believe Thomas Perez is kind of the poster child of just about everything that's wrong with the Obama administration in terms of its politicization, in terms of its embrace of these jihadists, in terms of so much more that will almost certainly make a horror show of the Labor Department and all of us who are affected by its purview. Senator, I really appreciate your taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I very much enjoyed being on and look forward to being on in the future.
Well, we will try to make it a regular feature if we can, sir. It's a pleasure, especially since you really are paying attention to some of the parts of our portfolio that are being all too neglected, both by the executive branch and, I'm afraid, too many of your colleagues in the Senate as well. Thank you for your leadership, Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas. Keep up the good work, sir, and we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon about what those jihadists are doing in Syria and what makes it a threat to not just the region, but to us. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Michael Medved is not afraid to say what others will not.
There is dysfunction at the heart of Islamic countries. Now, you can say it has nothing to do with true Islam. Okay, fine. That may be true. There were glorious years of Islamic civilization. But not in the last 400. I mean, for goodness sake.
Don't you see it before your eyes?
Is it wrong to point out?
The Michael Medved Show. Weekdays at 3, right before Hugh Hewitt at 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Adam Credo. He is the senior writer for the Washington Free Beacon, a marvelous resource for all of us interested in particularly national security affairs, which is part of Adam's beat. He is an award-winning political reporter, formerly with the Washington Jewish Week, and his various writings and observations have been published widely, including in the Jerusalem Post and Politico. Welcome back, Adam. It's always good to have you with us, sir.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
You're doing some really important reporting, Adam, on what is going on in Syria. We've been talking about it in the course of the day, and we'll, I'm sure, with the rest of our guests. Give me your sense, if you would, as to what is going on in Syria at the moment, specifically with respect to this sort of rising role being played there by jihadists.
That's right. As conflict there continues to kind of spiral out of control, we don't know who is fighting whom and for whom, even at this point. Obviously, the rebels want to bring down Assad, but we also have jihadis, we have radicals, we have al-Qaeda there, and they're plotting attacks against Israel, and they're trying to make Syria a new homeland, a jihadi training camp, if you will. And this was actually an issue that was discussed yesterday on Capitol Hill by a cadre of experts.
Adam Credo, you've written that we're actually seeing now jihadis from all over the West coming to Syria to get their chops, if you will, and presumably to head back to wherever they came from and spread jihad. We, of course, had a very ugly episode of that breaking out in the streets of London. Do you expect we will see more of it as a result of what they're being taught to do in Syria?
Middle East experts and lawmakers are certainly worried about this in the aftermath of London yesterday and Boston several weeks ago, that Americans and Europeans who are traveling to Syria to join the fight are also learning tips from al-Qaeda, how to make explosives, radical ideology, how to fight, how to wage jihad and bring that back to the West. And that, of course, a concern. Where do these people go after the conflict ends? They have passports and they can easily travel back home and disseminate ideology or even carry out an attack.
We're joined once again by Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon. And Adam, we were talking about the development that you've reported on at the Beacon just today, specifically the degree to which we're seeing jihadists getting training that they can return to their home countries in the West to perpetrate on the rest of us. I'd want to switch gears, if I can, and just ask, what are you seeing at the moment in Syria itself, specifically as al-Qaeda and others seemingly are beginning now, Hezbollah among them, to become more dominant in parts of the country? Talk a little bit about specifically what's happening on the Golan Heights and what that might mean for Israel and for us, for that matter.
Well, right. Well, aside from these al-Qaeda forces penetrating Syria, we also have Iran and its terror proxy group Hezbollah, which want to prop up Assad. But what they're also doing, according to multiple reports that are coming out in the region and even trickling out here, is they're building a force on Israel's northern border, the Golan Heights. And the goal for them is to attack Israel. It's always to attack Israel. But because of the chaos in Syria, they have a real opportunity to, one, bolster Assad, and two, take this conflict to Israel and distract and divert attention, and of course cause as many casualties. And we've already seen this. Israel was attacked on its northern front, which had been quiet for decades, just a few days ago. And I expect that we're going to see this ramp up as brigades that are filled with Iranian forces and Hezbollah really continue to travel to Syria with the aim of targeting Israel. And Israel is probably what they say will be a massive response if, in fact, this does happen.
Another part of this play is neighboring Turkey. And you have been doing some very important reporting, Adam Credo, at the Free Beacon about the Turks and what they're up to. I'm interested in your thoughts not only about what they're doing over there in Syria and elsewhere in that part of the world, as well as to their own people, which is, of course, increasingly to be imposing this sort of Sharia doctrine on them all, but also what the Turks are up to in this country. And in particular, you've raised some concerns about a group called the Center for American Progress and their ties to the Turks. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. As all of this happens in Syria, the Obama administration is really looking to Turkey and seeing its prime minister, Erdogan, as an ally. But what's happening in Turkey is not so great. They're increasingly cracking down on press freedoms. They imprison more reporters and journalists than any other country. Freedom House organizations like this rate them as partly free. They are not a democratic state, and they're not necessarily a Western ally, but they do have their friends here. And one of their friends is the prominent D.C. think tank, the Center for American Progress, which is very closely tied to the Obama administration. And CAP has been receiving money from a Turkish business group named Tuskin, and many people might not know about this, but Tuskin has donated at least $25,000 to CAP to join a very exclusive business club that CAP organizes, and there's any other number of monies that are going in there. We just don't know. CAP does not reveal its donors, but we can see the evidence of what might be influence in reports that CAP puts out, and it put one out recently on press freedoms in Turkey, and it really tried to downplay and whitewash what the Erdogan government is up to, and it's a very dangerous thing, and experts believe that it might be because of the influence of this Tuskin group. And who are they? Well, they're well connected to the Erdogan government, but they're also connected to a Turkish cleric, Fethullah Gulen, and Gulen has really built a worldwide Islamist empire. Many have reported this. And it's interesting to see the influence of this in CAP's report and the untold influence that could be going on behind the scenes with their experts. CAP organizes an annual trip to Turkey with this Tuskin group, so it's really an access thing.
Well, this is a really important bit of investigative journalism, which our guest Adam Credo specializes in. Adam, I'm sure you're very much aware of one other aspect of Fethullah Gulen's empire, as you put it, and operations, influence operations, namely building so-called science, technology, engineering, and mathematics schools across the United States in the guise of publicly funded charter schools. And this, like the penetration that you've described of the Center for American Progress, is very worrying. I was heartened and delighted to be able to participate in the rejection of one of those schools out in Loudoun County, Virginia, recently. But they are very much on the march, 135 or so of them around the United States, and buying access, including by buying these kinds of all-expenses-paid trips to Turkey for county supervisors, school board members, state legislators, and governors even, is very much part of what these guys are up to, and I'm glad you're putting a Klieg light on it. Speaking of media freedoms, quickly, if you would, Adam Credo, talk to me about the Media Shield Act that the president is now promoting in the aftermath of some behavior that suggests he's rather indifferent to media freedoms.
Yeah, well, it's interesting timing to see this reappear. The Media Shield Act is something that's been bandying about in Congress for quite a while. It's never really gotten anywhere, although I'm sure journalists would like to see it. But since the Obama administration has been accused of really cracking down on First Amendment rights, tapping the phone lines of Associated Press reporters and who knows who else, it could be many, many more. And I think we will see more, and we have as the days go by. But this Media Shield Act would protect journalists and protect journalist sources. We all remember the case of Judy Miller, who actually went to prison for her source when she worked for the New York Times. This type of act would protect journalists from having to reveal their sources and have to go to prison and put other safeguards in place. But the one thing I've always found interesting about the Shield Act is the fact that if the First Amendment was as strong and as robust as it should be, we wouldn't really need a law to protect journalists.
Amen. Amen. Adam Credo, we have to let you go at that. Very important point. I'm worried myself about some aspects of the Media Shield Act, at least in its previous incarnations. We'll see what the new one looks like when Chuck Schumer trots it out. We'll follow it closely, as I know you will. Keep up the good work, my friend, at the Washington Free Beacon, and we'll talk with you soon. Next up, we'll be talking with Ambassador John Bolton about much of this and more. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. By now, you have probably seen the video of two jihadists fresh from butchering a British soldier yesterday in South London. Needless to say, the images of this savagery are shocking. But so were the efforts being made to dissemble about the impetus behind this atrocity in a Western capital. Islamists and their apologists would have us believe it has nothing to do with the tenets of Sharia, the supremacist Islamic doctrine that impels jihad. In fact, the perpetrators shouted Allahu Akbar, the jihadist invocation of God's will, as they hacked away at their victim. Then one cited to bystanders Quranic passages justifying their murderous violence. Make no mistake, this is the face of Sharia, and it is past time that we recognize it as such and take steps to counter it. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed four Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate, and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back with John Bolton, the Honorable John Bolton, and I mean that in both the formal as well as the literal sense. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, a man who served in many capacities in the United States government. He is currently with the remarkably influential American Enterprise Institute, the author of Surrender is Not an Option, and a periodic contributor to our work here at Secure Freedom Radio. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be back with you, Frank.
Let's start with the horrific attack that took place on the streets of London yesterday, in which jihadists, self-described, it seems, jihadists massacred a young British soldier. Is this the shape of things to come, do you think, Ambassador Bolton? And if so, are we alive to that danger?
I'm very much afraid it's the shape of things to come. It's really a repetition, in a way, of the subway and bus bombings in London in 2007. In both cases, you had people who were born and raised in Britain undertaking these terrorist acts, people who saw all the benefits of a free society and rejected it. I mean, that to me is more frightening than lax immigration procedures. I mean, here are people who have been here in the UK their entire lives, like Nidal Hassan at Fort Hood, that the administration still can't understand as an act of terror. And I think that this notion that you can become a terrorist without sort of getting the Al-Qaeda decoder ring and learning the secret Al-Qaeda handshake is something the administration won't face up to. These are terrorists. They are part of an international network. It may be a virtual network. But the notion that they're kind of one-off, self-starting, nothing to worry about, that whole narrative, I think, has been wrong for a long time, and I think we're now beginning to see the consequences of not taking this homegrown threat seriously.
Yeah. Do you have any doubt that these fellows are jihadists and animated by this, the doctrine they call Sharia, to engage in this kind of holy war against us?
No, not in the slightest. Number one, they said it themselves. You know, presumably if they had something else in mind, they could have said it. And I was gratified, I have to say, by British Prime Minister David Cameron not trying to find some other excuse for it, like road rage or something, which I think the Obama administration would have tried to do. He flat out said it was terrorism. And he flat out said they will not succeed in this. We will win, a word the president doesn't like to use any more than he likes to use the word international terrorism. So I commend Cameron, and I think he provides a lesson that we could learn a lot from in this country.
Well, I hope he will follow through on it and provide lessons about what to do about it as well. John Bolton, let me ask you about another issue that I know you have followed closely, both in government and out, specifically the threat emerging from North Korea. Several of our colleagues have in recent days written in the Wall Street Journal about that threat now apparently translating into an electromagnetic pulse attack capability, among other things. Where do you think we stand now vis-a-vis North Korea, and what should we be doing about it?
Well, I think this threat of an EMP attack, whether from the North Korean nuclear weapons program or from Iran when they achieve nuclear weapons, which is very, very close, is something that we need to pay more attention to. I think the administration likes to talk about the threat of nuclear proliferation, but its only response is to try and find a conference table and get, whether it's Iran or North Korea or whomever the proliferator is, on the other side of it. That hasn't worked for the last 20 years. It's not going to work. It's going to leave us in a much more dangerous position. I think North Korea is a threat not only in Northeast Asia. I think it's a threat around the world, as Jim Woolsey and his co-author indicated. And I think that, that there's more and more reason to believe that the axis of evil is not just a metaphor. We've known for 15 years Iran and North Korea have cooperated on ballistic missiles, which is the delivery system for nuclear weapons, and more reason to think they're cooperating on the nuclear side as well. So this problem is metastasizing, and yet the administration just seems unable or unwilling to grasp it.
John Bolton, let me ask, as a result of that, I think, very accurate, if very frightening, prospect, about your thoughts as President Obama prepares for a summit meeting with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. There is continuing chatter in the system that the president is determined to reduce and otherwise constrain our missile defense capabilities. It would seem, based on what you've said, what Jim Woolsey and Peter Pry have written about and others, that if anything, we need more missile defense rather than less. Are you alarmed at this as the trend that the administration has been on for some time, but that it seems to be doubling down on it under these circumstances?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think that's their intention. I think they have a theological opposition to missile defense. Derived from Cold War days when they thought missile defense, you know, otherwise known as defending American civilians, was somehow destabilizing strategically. And they're still back in a Cold War mindset when the Russians fear the consequences of an America being able to defend itself. But the real point at this stage is not worried about Russia. It's worried about states like Iran or North Korea that will end up with a relatively small number of nuclear weapons, small at least compared to Russia, but with the capacity thereby to intimidate and threaten and literally terrorize the United States. The whole Bush missile defense system at the national level was not designed to protect us against Russia. It was not that ambitious. It was designed to protect us against North Korea and Iran, which, by the way, is something the Russians, if they understood their own priorities correct, ought to be worried about as well. And I think all of the administration's efforts for the last 4.5 years to give back concessions to the Russians on missile defense doesn't do anything to strengthen our relations with Russia. They're just going to take one concession after the other from us and put it in their pocket. Where it weakens us and leaves us particularly vulnerable is from the threat of the rogue states.
Yeah, I must say, though, I've been worrying about the Russians more and more, too, John Bolton. We've been talking.
Well, we should be. No, you're exactly right. I still favor a Ronald Reagan-style comprehensive national missile defense system. But that's why the outrageous efforts by the Obama administration to reduce even Bush's limited national missile defense system are so indefensible, in my view.
They are indeed. And again, I was just saying that we've been talking a bit of late about the Russian nuclear missile and weapons buildup, as it contrasts so sharply with the Obama administration's determination to reduce our nuclear forces as well as our missile defenses in either through the atrophying of those forces, sort of designed obsolescence, or through cuts, unilateral or otherwise. And all of this just comes together, as you've said so well, Ambassador John Bolton, formerly with the United Nations, now with the American Enterprise Institute, that this invites aggressive behavior on the part of others. Let me turn finally, if I may. We are speaking before the president makes his much ballyhooed speech today on national security-related issues, specifically his drone policy, we're told, perhaps some further refinement of his thinking on the al-Qaeda threat, which does not seem to be diminishing, let alone the only nature of the jihadist threat, as we talked about earlier, but also on Guantanamo Bay. And Mr. Ambassador, based on what we've heard about the speech, where he seems to be going, what can you tell us, and what do you think he should be saying to the American people at this juncture?
Well, I'm delighted he's going to defend his drone policy, even if it looks like he may cut back the use of drones, because I think that locks in that it's an acceptable and legitimate form of self-defense against the terrorists. But I think the real key point here is he's apparently going to say that he wants Guantanamo closed. And I think that is a reflection that at bottom, the administration still thinks that terrorism is a matter of criminal law enforcement and not a war against the United States. And I think that's consistent with what's been reported, that we've identified 18 of the attackers against our consulate in Benghazi on September the 11th. But we're not doing anything about them because we don't think we've got quite enough evidence to prove their guilt beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal prosecution. That's not how we should be handling terrorists. This is not like a jumped-up bank attack. This is an attack on America, an attack on our civilization. We should treat it like a war, treat it under the laws of war, the law of war paradigm, and respond that way. The administration is making a conscious decision to follow a policy which will leave America much less secure. And that's got 3.5 more years to run.
Yeah, it's really the triumph of sort of the philosophy of putting politics above the public safety and closing Guantanamo Bay, transferring its people, in many cases, back to Yemen, where they will almost certainly return to the battlefield and the like, are simply misbegotten and probably ultimately malfeasant in the extreme. John Bolton, we appreciate very much your alternative perspective on all of these matters, your leadership. I trust that you will continue to share it with us as soon as you can. And in the meantime, stay well. Keep up the good work. Next up, we'll be speaking with Fred Flights of Langley Intelligence Group Network on his take on the state of the war. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
The ambassador of civil discourse, Dennis Prager.
That a liberal does not recognize that there is a secular left brainwash
at virtually every university in the United States.
I've said this probably 1,000 times. I don't mind that the New York Times is left. I mind that there are people who deny it's left.
The Dennis Prager Show, weekdays at noon, right before Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Mike Gallagher doesn't apologize for speaking the truth.
People are not economically equal. They never have been.
They never will be.
But we believe in giving people the opportunity to try to become financially successful.
How are you going to make a janitor economically equal to a CEO?
But that's what this fierce liberal mindset tries to suggest. And then everybody's happy. Right?
Right.
Wrong.
The Mike Gallagher Show. Weekdays from 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights. He is the managing editor of the Langley Intelligence Group Network, also known by its call sign, Lignet.com, a career Central Intelligence officer, and man who has served in many other capacities in the executive and legislative branches, bringing to bear extraordinary acumen on matters of intelligence and national security, and he shares them with us every week. Welcome back, Fred. It's good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Frank.
I know we catch you on the margins of some remarks you're going to be giving on Fox News on the president's speech today at the National Defense University. We talked briefly about it with one of your old bosses, John Bolton, a moment ago. Tell us what you expect the president to say and what we should be expecting will come of what he says.
Well, I don't want to overlap what your other guests have talked about, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about Guantanamo. The president reportedly is going to propose moving some or all of the 56 Yemeni detainees back to Yemen. And there's also reports he may be thinking of moving the detainees to Afghanistan. These are terrible ideas. We know the Yemeni government is very unstable. It is under fire by separatist groups, by al-Qaeda. It is having to deal with loyalists of the Saudi regime, which has only been out of power a little over a year. We don't know that that government will be there in another year. And sending them to Afghanistan, where terrorist prisoners have been liberated by Taliban attacks on prisons, is really a big problem. What's needed here, if the president is serious about closing Guantanamo, is to get Europe, which is the main pressure on him, the main pressure point to close this, they have to agree to accept some of these dangerous detainees, but they won't. They complain, they go to the media, they bother him every time European leaders meet him, but they're not willing to accept the most dangerous detainees. They can't be moved to the United States, and I think the best situation is to leave it alone.
Yeah, I think so too, and that was certainly John Bolton's view. To the extent, and we're speaking of again before the president's remarks, but is there any doubt in your mind, Fred Flights, that some, at least, of these folks, if they are in fact released, either by the government of Yemen collapsing or the government of Afghanistan simply turning them loose, that they will return to the battlefield? And what might that mean in terms of threats to the United States that don't exist today because they are safely incarcerated at Guantanamo Bay?
In the recent report on Guantanamo, the Office of Director of National Intelligence said that the recidivism rate is 29%. Of people known or suspected of returning to the battlefield from Guantanamo, 29%. And these people are angry, they're dangerous. And we hear stories about how vicious these detainees from the media and sometimes in congressional hearings. These people are not going to simply crawl under a rock. If they escape, at least they're going to join the battlefield. They're going to try to commit terrorist acts against the United States.
Yeah. What we've seen as well, which is often unreported, is the abuse that they heap on their guards in Guantanamo Bay. If this is any indication of the level of enmity that they feel, I think you're absolutely right. We'll see them back in the fight before too long if the president foolishly persists in going down this road. I hope Congress will not let him do it, as it has stopped him thus far. Fred, let me talk to you about a couple of other issues. We've been watching with interest, as I know you have at the Langley Intelligence Group Network, the Iranian elections. What do you make of the slate of candidates that have now been served up for the people of Iran ostensibly to choose between?
Well, we were thinking that there was a chance that Supreme Leader Khamenei would allow former President Rafsanjani to be a candidate to try to appeal to younger and reform-minded voters, thinking he will lose because he would lose because the election will be fixed if he won. But that didn't happen, and it was a fascinating development. There are eight candidates who've been approved who are extremely close to Khamenei. And the way Lignet is interpreting this is that the Iranian regime is simply taking no chances with the Arab Spring and the effects of the Green Opposition Movement. They are cracking down on the opposition, and they are doing everything they have to do to consolidate their hold on power.
This is a persistent theme of this regime, and it sounds as though they're doubling down, in effect. Let me ask you, Fred Flights, North Korea is another country that you all have been following closely, both in your previous incarnations on Capitol Hill with the Intelligence Committee there and in Secretary Bolton's office. To the extent that North Korea is continuing to test these missiles of varying ranges and persisting in its preparations for perhaps further nuclear tests, you've written that this is perhaps evidence of a desire for attention. Does it constitute a threat as well?
It does constitute a threat. I think the North Koreans are very sensitive to the media, and when they're not on the front page of the major newspapers, I'd like to remind the world that they're there. But at the same time, they are trying to improve the capabilities of their missiles, and that those capabilities are improving rapidly. As you know, earlier this year, they finally placed a satellite into orbit using a missile that could easily carry a projectile as far as the United States, assuming they could get the mechanisms ready for aiming. It's troubling every time they launch a missile because they're just improving their expertise.
Right. Well, and as I think you will have reported at Lignet.com, one other problem which Peter Pry has written about with Jim Woolsey in the Wall Street Journal, as we talked about earlier with John Bolton this week, is the possibility that even a satellite could be used as a means of delivering, say, an electromagnetic pulse weapon over our country, and with devastating effects. This is something that we are not hearing more and nearly enough about, or certainly doing enough to counter. Fred, Lignet has been reporting on a subject that I'm very keen on, and that is China's increasing assertiveness around the world, and in particular its quest for resources that extends apparently up into the Arctic. They've run into some problems recently with their effort to sort of colonize, as a practical matter, Siberia. We're also hearing them assert their sovereignty over most of the South China Sea. John Bolton is warning that, you know, the kind of weakening of our national security capabilities is inviting this kind of behavior. Do you see that kind of correlation as well?
I think that China is filling every niche they can to lock up resources. They're making agreements with reprehensible governments in Sudan and Eritrea, and they're looking for everywhere where we're not looking. They're trying to strike deals. They gave billions to Hugo Chavez to lock up access to Chavez's oil. And I think as we withdraw our forces and focus on a small number of domestic issues, China sees a lot of opportunities. And I think it has long-term implications for the U.S.
I'm afraid you're right. Fred, lastly, you have been doing some interesting thinking about whence these jihadists come. And in a piece at Lignet.com today, you have an essay about the role women seem to be playing in the inculcation of this Sharia doctrine and its call to jihad in some. The Timurlan Tsarnaev comes to mind, the elder of the two Boston bombers. Give us your thoughts on, Fred Flights, how that role is being either misunderstood or perhaps now at last getting attention increasingly from government sources.
I think this is a missing link in our thinking about the threat from radical Islamists. And this was from Andy Polk, who's a former, who used to head the House Joint Counterterrorism Working Group. And he gave a lot of thought to this and talked to some of his experts. And he said there really is there's a thread there of radicalism among some women in Muslim communities who are actually pushing their men to engage in this. And he thinks that's what happened with the Tsarnaev family.
Yeah, it certainly could be. And I think at the very least it bears close observation, along with the mosques, along with the internet devices that are used to promote this this sort of jihad, and all of the other cultural and institutional infrastructure that folks like the Muslim Brotherhood have been putting in place in this country and elsewhere. Fred Flights, we have to let it go at that. Thank you so much for joining us from Lignet.com. Keep up the good work there. Keep coming back to us. We appreciate your contributions tremendously, and I hope the rest of you will come back to us as well. Again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.